This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, call this number, 1-800-462-7413. A line open now for you at 800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, some topics to talk about.
Right. When we look at television, reality TV, is it actually teaching us something we shouldn't really be learning? In other words, those over-the-top TV shows and comments, are they really affecting society? Some interesting research. Certainly, it is provocative.
Sounds interesting. What else?
Kids and cholesterol. Should we be testing them early? What shall we be doing with our children who may be obese and have cholesterol problems in middle school? Some interesting data, interesting research on society and our children.
And our recipes.
Zesty turkey rolls. And I want to accent the word zesty. Hey. Because it is zesty. It's a wonderful, heart-healthy recipe. Great recipe. Something that you may want to consider this week at your house.
Those and our medical myth buster coming up later. But right now, it's telephone call time. We welcome a listener, Zorba, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Yes, I have this problem, really. I have a son. He's 3.5 years old now. And he has this recurring problem of nosebleed. It's been on for about 1.5 years, and in that interval, I've had him go to the hospital for a checkup. The reason given is that he probably pricks his nose while I play, and that causes it to bleed. But I seem not to be I'm not really satisfied with that because I've observed him. I never really saw that happen. So I'm just kind of curious if it's something bigger than it seems, and I'm concerned a little bit.
Yeah. A couple of interesting things. First of all, sometimes there are a few things that you can do with kids who have nosebleeds. And that, by the way, is not uncommon, but it's kind of disastrous when it happens because you're bleeding all over and it gets all over your clothing. And it's interesting. It's something that happened to me when I was a child. I used to have frequent nosebleeds, and I was accused.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was basically accused of the same thing. I can remember my mother saying, "Don't pick your nose." And we would have discussions about that because I was... didn't think I was picking my nose. But a couple of things about this. First of all, one of the things you want to do in terms of your son, we do touch our noses all the time. Everybody does. And what you want to do is make sure his nails are cut short. And you
okay.
And I'll tell you why. You also want him to brush his nails with a nail brush at least once a day to get the dirt from under the nail and the possible infection from under the nails. In other words, some children and some adults also carry infections under their nails, such as staph. So what you want to do is you want to make sure he cleans his nails, you know, not in the sink, you know, a little bar soap in the sink and put it under the nail, but a nail brush is just something that is going to help a little bit to do that. Second thing you want to do is bring him to his regular doctor and get his nose cultured to see whether or not he's got a staph infection. And the reason is sometimes they'll have a superficial infection in the nose and it just stays there and it bleeds. Infections bleed. That's kind of what they do. So you check with a culture to see if he's got a staph infection. And if so, there's an antibiotic cream and an antibiotic ointment that you cannot buy without a prescription called Bactobam, B-A-C-T-O-B-A-M, Bactobam.
Okay.
And it's very, very good. Now, what you can do in the meantime, you know, before he even gets cultured, as I said, you know, wash his fingernails. But I would also get some triple antibiotic ointment, or I would get bacitracin. So bacitracin, Neosporin, one of those. And just have him put a little bit in his nose once in the morning when he gets up, once in the evening when he goes to sleep, and do that for a month or two. Quite often that'll do it. It'll moisturize the nose. It'll get rid of some superficial infections. If you don't want to go to the doctor and get it cultured, I'd kind of try that first. The cleaning of the nails and then essentially putting the ointment in his nose and see what that would do. Sounds like he may have a little chronic infection there. That's what I think.
Okay. Well,
good luck to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate the call. Zorba, how come we outgrow nosebleeds? Why do kids have them and adults don't?
You know, that is true. We tend to get nosebleeds when we're younger.
Yeah.
And as adults, we don't get it. Well, one of the things as we get older, our skin actually gets thicker. I don't know if the mucous membranes in our nose get thicker. It gets thicker. I also don't know because there is trauma. I mean, we all touch our noses. And I don't know if kids touch their noses more than adults. But the other thing is we tend to be cleaner as adults. And that may be part of it. We have a lot of bacteria under our nails. Children have tons of bacteria under their nails in. And it's the washing of those nails that can make a big difference.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Auburn, Alabama. Hi.
Hello, Zorba. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's
I've got a puzzling foot problem question for you that I've been dealing with.
Okay.
For about the last, 15 years or so, and I'm 51, I have normal, little calluses on my feet. But sometimes beneath some of these calluses, especially on the ball of my foot, will begin to develop just tiny little annoying little points of irritation or pain. And it's mild at first, and it, will get worse. And when it gets annoying enough, I will soak my feet, pumice them, shave the callus. And if I keep going, what I've discovered is, and I've done this numerous times, is if I gently just pick underneath that callus, often I get to a tiny little, what appears to be like a grain of sand or a tiny little tough deposit of something. And one doctor probably 12, 13 years ago said he called it mosaic warts. Now, if it were warts, I wouldn't think I'd be able to just get this tiny little thing out and then it's gone and doesn't bother me. But it does spring up somewhere else. So I guess my question is, what's going on? What is the little grain of white something that develops there that I'm able to get out? And then also, my mother had what she thought was a plantar's wart taken out one time that ended up coming back. They went deep in the ball of her foot for that.
Well, the plantar wart, by the way, a wart on the plantar surface of the foot is called a plantar wart. And it's only it's where it is. In other words, that's just where they are. And we notice them. They're not actually a different kind of a wart. People get skin, warts on any part of their skin.
Well, that's a dumb question, but where is the plantar's part
of the foot? It's on the sole of the foot. So you're walking on it, and it hurts you. And it just means, when you say plantar wart, you just mean I've got a wart on the sole of the foot. And it sounds to me like you might have a mosaic wart. That certainly is possible that you may have it. But a couple things about calluses. Calluses are usually from improperly fitted shoes. They're sort of our body's memory. Improperly fitted shoes and the way we're wearing shoes. You have good shoes? Are they fit right? Sounds like you've had calluses for a long, long time.
Yeah, and they're not real bad. I mean, they seem kind of thin. And so, like when I pumice them. Yes, I do wear good shoes because my left foot has been fractured twice, and so I wear Birkenstocks or...
Okay.
It's always got to be good and comfortable.
You're wearing a good shoe. This sounds to me like these may be warts. Especially if there's something that's underneath the callus that seems to be sort of present and white. I mean, it sounds wart-like to me. If you put your shoe up to the radio, I'll just take a look at it through the airwaves. But short of that, it's going to be a little hard to do. I want to just a bit about warts, by the way. There are things you can do for warts. The simplest way to take care of a wart often is duct tape. Good old-fashioned duct tape. Gray duct tape because it's got good sticky stuff. You can use red. A little square over there will actually sort of, it doesn't exactly eat into the wart, but it does something. And you have to wear it basically for 6 to 8 weeks. And you take it off once a week and you pumice it down and put it back on. So I think I'd duct tape the area. If it bothers you, I'd see if that would work. It's sort of a non-drug way of doing it. And if that fails, sometimes you get an injection of something called candida. And candida, which is yeast, we all tend to react to, and it sort of increases the body's ability to mount a response to get rid of the warts. And so sometimes an injection of candida around the wart or in the area can actually get rid of these things once and for all. It sounds like you've been suffering with this for a while.
The pain level is kind of low, either that or I have it. It really isn't bad. When it starts getting bad, that's when I, take care of this, but I'm just always surprised I can get that out. Now, I do have another little question for you, though, related to this. Whatever they took off my mom's foot, when it came back, she went to a foot medical doctor in Dallas, and he said, don't let anybody cut on your foot for a plantar's wart. Again, he said, people over 40 don't get plantar's warts.
And, well, first of all, Number one, he's right. Don't let anybody cut on your foot for a plantar wart anytime, because we don't do that anymore because it can form a scar. But he's wrong. People can get plantar warts at any time. They're more common in kids than in adults. So number two, he was wrong. But number one, he was right. Never have a plantar wart cut out. So good luck to you and good luck to your feet.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. We appreciate the call. So, Zorba, these reality shows on television may be changing our behavior?
Well, you know, you're sitting in front of your TV and you're looking at, think about it, you're looking at reality shows. Now, I'm not big at watching reality
shows.
Let's
put reality shows in quotes, by the way, because there's nothing real.
Yeah, there's nothing real about the reality shows. Quote, the reality shows really are a sort of hyperactive, hyperbole-type responses where people exaggerate.
They're also coached and scripted and the whole deal.
Absolutely, absolutely. They're really not reality shows. And besides, having somebody in your house all the time with a camera looking around, I don't know about you, but that's not my reality.
This is a reality show.
Yeah.
This is real people talking about
absolutely,
real things and not
actually.
Acting about them.
Actually, this is a reality show. So the real question is, there's some recent studies that seem to show that people are beginning to believe that this is the way people normally interact, that maybe this is the way people normally are, that maybe people are beginning in some ways to take this reality, the reality show phenomenon, quote unquote, as being the real way we should treat each other.
Is this just somebody's opinion, or have they looked at this and studied it?
Well, you know, it's kind of an opinion of the person who looked at it and studied it. I mean, I don't think there's any hard research on it, but I think it's worth discussing in the fact that they blur these quote reality shows blur the difference between the sitcom, which we know is absolutely scripted comedy.
Sure.
I mean, we know Jerry Seinfeld really doesn't live in that building, and eat in that coffee shop with George all the time. On one hand, and then we have the CNN news, if you will, on the other hand. And then you have these reality shows that blur that difference. And I'm not so worried about adults, but I wonder about kids. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about teenage kids who look and say, well, this is the way you treat mom, and this is the way you treat dad, and this is what it's like to be an adult. I think kids learn things from television.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth talking about with your children. Yeah. And I think from a children's point of view with television, I think it's a parent's job to look at TV of impression middle school children and help them make wise choices because those choices can affect their lives.
They understand that if there's some sort of minor disagreement or conflict, it isn't okay to escalate it into some total screaming match or
absolutely. And once again, I think this is something with our children. I mean, it's always an issue. Kids watch a ton of television. They look at a ton of things on YouTube. They look at a ton of things in their computer, and they watch a ton of television. And it's more and more common than ever before. And you don't want your children to sort of think that reality TV is, I mean, kids learn from Sesame Street. Who's to say they're not learning from a reality TV? And I think parents beware.
800-462-7413. Callers are waiting. An open line for you right now at 800-462-7413. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Bloomington, Indiana. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Good. I have a question. I have here in the last 90 days had a condition, a tinea condition. I believe it's tinea cutis, commonly known as jock itch.
Mm-hmm.
And I have contacted what I would call a world-class jock itch. My physician said probably from the YMCA. So anyway, my question is...
Wait a second. So this person is certified in jock itch, also called by a variety of other names, but basically means in that area. So this is a world-class jock itch certified specialist.
That's what I called it. Because I've battled it so much.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, they placed me on a medication, a prescription drug, Ketoconazole,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
200 milligrams a day. So I've taken that for 90 days. They thought I'd be knocked out in 30 days. My question is, I also use the over-the-counter sprays and powders.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, I battled it pretty good, but it just took so long to get rid of it. And I looked on the Internet about some alternative ways to deal with it and came up with coconut oil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And applied garlic. It's supposed to be real good, so I made a paste out of those. And I just don't want to go through the prescription drugs again if I ever have this. And I just wanted to know what kind of information you have. Also, apple cider vinegar is supposed to be good, and I wonder what kind of information you have.
Uh-huh, sure. Well, you know, touching on apple cider vinegar, it's sort of been like you can use the apple cider vinegar for everything. You know, put it in your crotch and drink it down, and it'll cure cancer, heart disease, and
not
dementia.
Not in that order, you were.
Yeah, no, not in that order, Benny. But getting back to the issue, how dry do you keep yourself? Because dryness is really a major issue.
As dry as I can. Shower 3 times a day, dry the area with a box fan, use the powders.
I've got a couple suggestions. There's something called Drysol, D-R-I-S-O-L, and it's used for people who sweat on their feet. And I've had some success with this for people who sweat in their perineal area. That's the scientific term for the area we're talking about, perineal area. And because basically you're sweating a lot. And if you can get rid of the moisture and decrease the moisture, that will often help solve the problem. So that'd be number one. Number two, I would use a potent topical antifungal cream, you know, such as a Lotrimin Ultra, U-L-T-R-A. Lotrimin Ultra you can buy over-the-counter without a prescription. I don't think the garlic's going to do much, frankly, and I don't think coconut oil is going to do much.
But does it matter what kind of underwear you wear?
The underwear can make a difference because you want the area to – you want to be able to get some air in there. So
breathe.
You want to wear –
Boxers,
although you don't really breathe there, but you want boxers versus briefs. And by the way, you use the right side, the Grizzly, the Fulvicin that you use, but sometimes there are other drugs such as Nizoral, N-I-Z-O-R-A-L, and other things such as Lamisil, L-A-M-I-S-I-L. But those are, once again, those are pills, and you want to stay away from those if you can possibly do it by dryness. But I think I'd try some Lotrimin Ultra, dry the area out, and then consider using Drysol, which is a prescription, sort of a super antiperspirant. That's okay. What I would do. What do you do for a living?
I have a construction company, so at times I'm quite active.
Yeah, and that's usually, and this is not an uncommon, it's usually a common people with people who are active. It's usually, you know, we find this more with people who are active than are not. So good luck to you.
All right, thank you.
Sure, thanks for the call. And before we break, Zorba, it's time for another edition of Traveling Tips from Zorba. Today's question comes to us from Robert in Billings, Montana. Robert is going on a cruise and has a question concerning motion sickness. He writes, I am a young 74 and planning a Princess land and cruise trip to Alaska. Motion sickness is a genetic problem in my family, especially in the back seat of a car. Driving and commercial jets are no problem. I usually take a Dramamine pill, and that works, but it puts me to sleep and makes me drowsy. And who wants to miss the sights of Alaska, plus always worrying about having to have a barf bag as my constant companion? So?
Well, first of all, Dramamine, great over-the-counter anti-emetic drug, which is an antihistamine. It works beautifully, but it makes you sleepy. Claritin doesn't make you sleepy, but it also doesn't work nearly as well. Claritin is a good example of a non-sedating antihistamine. But the other thing you can use is a scopolamine patch, and you can buy these. They're prescription. You put them in the back of your ear. It really doesn't matter where they are in the body. They just fit nicely in the back of the ear, and you wear them for 3 days, and they are an excellent, excellent thing to use if you're on a cruise such as this. You can also have your local pharmacist compound scopolamine. My local pharmacist will do that, and you just put a little bit on the back of the ear, and it sort of absorbs into the body, and it's just another way of treating this.
Yeah, I've got to say, too, that these cruise ships these days have amazing stabilizers.
They do.
And that inner passage to Alaska is really a calm
cruise.
It
is.
So
yes, it
chances
is.
Yes, are he's going to be okay.
Yes, but on the other hand, I've been in that area, and sometimes you go on the little side cruises because you want
well,
to
go up.
You want to go up, up there, and you know something? Those are fast boats that really tip a little bit. They tip a little bit.
Well, Zorba definitely won't be playing Doc on any Love Boat cruises, so get your questions in before you depart during our next edition of Traveling Tips from Zorba. Just send your traveling question in an email to
zorba@wpr.org.
Our number is 800-462-7413. We have our recipe coming up next. After that, some interesting research and, of course, your phone calls. Oh, and our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that number is 800-462-7413. Zorba will answer your question. But before our next call, Zorba, our recipe, this one for zesty turkey rolls.
Zesty turkey rolls. Now, when was the last time you had a turkey roll?
It's been a while.
Yeah. I've never had a turkey roll.
Oh, you haven't had a turkey roll?
Never. I've had zesty things. I've had turkey. Yeah. I've had rolls. I've never had
a turkey
roll.
Oh, no, I've had turkey.
But the reality
you roll
is
it around,
we're always
there's
looking,
some stuff inside.
Yeah, we're always looking for things to make things tastier, better. I mean, you look at American food. You look at the food that I was brought in, like you, it was all beige. You know, we were brought up with beige food with, you know, the only condiments that we had in our house were salt.
Yeah, and pepper.
And pepper. Yeah. That was it. Salt and pepper, nothing else. But this is a zesty turkey roll. Really good, tasty, great this time of year.
Okay.
So let's do the recipe. Start out with a half cup of low-fat mayonnaise.
Half a cup of low-fat mayonnaise.
Yes. Now, mayonnaise is generally considered to be, well, it's fat. That's really what it is. And there were a recent article I read looked at the different tastes of different mayonnaise, the most common being Hellman's, Best Foods and Kraft, which is also under Best Foods and Kraft Mayonnaise, and looked at the different tastes. And generally, the low-fat mayonnaise came out pretty good. Not quite as good as regular mayonnaise, but on the other hand, it's a half a cup. So you want to go to low-fat because it's a good way of cutting things. For some people, they actually may use some yogurt in here also to give it a bit of, sort of moisture into it. So 2 teaspoons of curry powder.
2 little tea curry powder.
Buy your curry powder in small containers. And the reason is, if you buy it in large containers, you'll tend, unless you make a lot of curry, to have it for years and years and years, and you want to keep it fresh.
Taste,
absolutely. You want your spices to be relatively fresh. So 2 teaspoons of curry powder, a pint of blueberries.
Pint of blueberries.
Mm-hmm. 1 jalapeno pepper, seeded and diced.
That's interesting. You don't think of blueberries and peppers going together.
Not at all.
Much.
Sweet and hot.
Yeah.
Sweet and hot.
So this is 1 jalapeno pepper, seeded and diced.
Exactly. Make sure when you take the seeds out afterwards, you wash your hands. Mm-hmm. So you don't put your hands in your nose or your eyes, and then you don't want that.
Right.
1 kiwi peeled and diced.
A kiwi peeled and diced.
That sounds interesting. It sounds like you're interested in this.
Yeah,
the more we go into the recipe,
you can tell by my voice.
By your voice.
A kiwi,
absolutely.
Not a
I can also
kiwi.
Tell by the saliva coming out of your mouth
that
because
too,
it's tasty. 2 tablespoons of fresh lime juice.
2 big tea fresh lime juice.
That's right, fresh lime juice. Fresh is best. Reconstituted, not nearly as good. 1/4 red onion finely chopped.
1/4 red onion finely chopped.
That's right. Any onion will do, but red is prettier. And presentation is important in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the way you are. You dress right, you have to dress your food correctly.
That's what everybody always says.
Yeah, look at Tom. He's a sharp dresser.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like the same as me. 2 tablespoons of, that's why we're on radio, by the way.
You got it.
2 tablespoons of freshly chopped cilantro.
2 big tea freshly chopped cilantro.
1/2 teaspoon kosher salt.
1/2 little tea kosher salt.
Sea salt will do too. Mm-hmm. 8 leaves red leaf lettuce. That's going to be the nicest looking.
8 leaves of red leaf lettuce.
That's a roll. And 4 slices of your favorite deli turkey.
Finally, here comes the turkey. 4 slices of deli turkey.
Exactly. So combine the mayo and curry powder in a bowl. Then in a separate bowl, mix the blueberries, jalapeno, kiwi, red onion, cilantro, and salt into a salsa-like mixture. Then lay out the lettuce leaves, and on top of each of them, put a tablespoonful of the mayo mixture, 1/2 slice of turkey, and 1 tablespoonful of the blueberry salsa. Roll it up, maybe stick a little toothpick in it to make sure it doesn't unroll, and serve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful recipe. 125 calories, and I kind of like lettuce wraps like this because it's a way for us to cut down on carbohydrates. We eat too many carbohydrates. I'm not an anti-carb person, but we eat too many of them, and you're basically using lettuce to wrap up your sandwich.
This sounds like a delightful recipe.
Yeah, it really is. I think it really is good. 125 calories, only a very, very little of our calories actually come from fat because you're using a low-fat mayonnaise, and if you want a copy of our recipe,
I wish there was a way to get a...
You know, it's astounding,
yeah.
But you can do it instantly by going to your computer and doing www.zorbapastor.org, and you can find this recipe. You can search lots of other recipes on our website, and you can sign up for a weekly podcast. That's zorbapastor.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones, Zorba, and a listener with us now in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I just wanted to bring up a question to you guys. I have been living in Africa for the last 8 months, and I recently moved back to Birmingham. And during my time over there, it was a pretty difficult transition, but once I made it, I realized that my diet was great because it was primarily vegetarian, and it was all just fresh fruits and vegetables and grains, and really just no preservatives or any kind of chemical enhancement. And my question comes down to, I came home and I'm just trying to work my job and I'm just trying to get home and cook a quick and easy meal, but I do want to do it pretty healthy, and it's hard for me to really know what to do. So I was wondering if you could just point me to some resources on the web, or maybe one of your listeners would know about what exactly would be a good resource for me.
Just quick. What were you doing in Africa?
Well, to be completely honest, I moved there for a girl, and then use my skills to get a job with the Rwandan government as a consultant.
Yeah, did it work out with the girl?
I'll let you know in a couple of years.
Yeah. And that's the rest of the story.
Been there. Okay, Zorba.
It's an exciting life either way.
Yeah, it's an exciting. It's interesting what you had noticed when you were in Africa. There's a famous researcher who I met many years ago when I was in training. His name was Burkitt, McFarland Burkitt, and he was an English researcher and was really keen on the fact that he noticed that Africans did not die of heart disease at all. So he went around measuring stool samples. In other words, he went around to different areas of Africa looking at the weight of stools and came up with the concept, which is our modern concept, that fiber was important. That's what he noticed. I mean, he was the first one to say fiber really counts in dropping the risk of heart disease, stroke, and cancer, because what he discovered was that in societies where basically Africans ate more and more fiber, there was less and less heart disease. And that's because it's not just the fiber, but the fiber is a marker for eating in a more vegetarian way. That's really what it is. So the more vegetarian you are, the closer it's going to be to what you were eating before. So my recommendation is actually, I tell people, if you want to cook and know how to cook and what to eat, the best thing to do is go get yourself to a good bookstore. I like independent bookstores. I think they're the best. If there's not an independent in your town, I'd like Borders and Barnes & Noble. And look around and find a vegetarian cookbook that you like, and those would be the recipes that I would start with. It's not that you really have to be vegetarian, but what you want to do is look at fruits.
But he mentioned pesticides and that sort of thing.
Well, and if you look at organic keeps you away from pesticides. That's really the whole goal behind the organic movement, is to get away from pesticides and that sort. So what you want to do is look for a vegetarian-type cookbook, and you want to go organic. And therefore, you're going to really eat in a way that was really much better for you when you were there. One of the things that you've noticed probably when you try to cook things and you go to the grocery store here is everything is prepackaged, high salt and high fat. Is that what you noticed when you came back to the States?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the high fat and high salt content. It's not easy to find a simple option for a quick meal.
No, but I will tell you, there are a variety of stores, including Trader Joe's, and we have a Trader Joe's in Madison, and one of the things I like about that particular chain store is they have a lot of organic products. That's really what they specialize in, but they also have a lot of meals for one and meals for two that are high fiber, low fat, and low salt. And
great.
And they're a great place to go shopping because things are made for somebody who is one person or two people. So I highly recommend going there. They also, at Trader Joe's, you think I own stock in the company.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's a stock company. But they also have cookbooks there, and they really expand recipes in that particular store with their specials. So that's what I would recommend doing. That's what I would do.
Okay. Well, thank you for that feedback.
Good luck. And welcome back stateside.
Yeah. And good luck.
And good luck. Give us a call in 2 years. Let us know what happens.
Will do.
Thanks a lot. 800-462-7413.
You know, you laugh. There's some things that do happen 2 years later. I mean, that's, you know, sometimes you meet someone and then things happen and you meet them again. And before you know it, things happen again.
Okay, 800-462-7413. What's happening right now, Zorba, is another caller, listener in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a question regarding the insect repellent you put on the skin. The container says, after returning indoors to wash the treated skin with soap and water, does that mean if I use it late in the evening, I should shower before I go to bed, or can I wait till morning?
Well, that, you know, it's kind of interesting. That's the recommendation. So the recommendation, the concept being that it's not going to stay on your skin and absorb, I think it's sort of overkill. You know, if you're putting up mild to moderate amounts of DEET or some other spray, I think it really is overkill, and it's really not something that is essential to do. One of the things that's important when you go outside is to really spray your clothes more than you spray yourself. You know, and wear long sleeve shirts, a long sleeve shirt that's lightweight. Spray your clothes, and that's going to keep the DEET and the other toxic substances down. What do you use when you use insect repellent?
Well, I got some DEET. Mm-hmm. I also noticed in the store there's one that has picaridin.
That's it. I think it's picaridin that's pronounced. And that's a newer one that's on the market that does not have the same smell that DEET has. DEET has that sort of awful smell that we ignore. But I think it is pronounced picaridin, and I'm not sure for sure that that's pronounced, so I don't want the scientific grammar police giving me a call, but that has much less of a smell. And I was reading an article in Consumer Reports the other day about that it's really just as effective and less smelly. So, but again, once again, spray your clothes versus spraying your skin works better.
Okay, great. Always wondered about that.
Take care. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and speaking of bugs, Zorba, let's take a quick tip from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This helpful hint comes to us from Professor Judith in Buffalo, New York. Not too long ago, we were chatting about how annoying flies can ruin a good picnic. Well, Dr. Judith has a solution. She writes, "What I do is make a plate with a little sample of everything we are eating at our picnic, including any sauce or butter. I put it on a small table or ledge about 6 feet from where we are sitting. In no time at all, the flies and bees discover the food and fly there, leaving us alone. It works every time."
I love it.
Isn't that a great idea?
That's a great idea. I think that's a wonderful idea. So they're basically, that's their meal, and their meal is not your meal.
And they understand that nobody's going to bother them there by trying to swat them away, I assume. And they just can eat to their little heart's content.
I will have to try that next time.
Oh, she adds, the flies love a partially eaten corn cob with butter. So do I. They have good taste, those flies. If you have a tip that can help a problem buzz off, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Well, we have some more interesting research to talk over, more of your calls too, and our medical myth buster. Lots of good reasons to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But before we take our next call, we'll talk some about screening for cholesterol, and in this case, screening at fifth grade level.
That's right. That's right. This was a study that really looked at cholesterol tests and whether or not fifth grade kids should be screened. It was a study out of West Virginia. And when they looked at 20,000 kids, they looked at them to find out who should be screened and who shouldn't be screened. What's their height? What's their weight? What's their family history? Surprisingly, more than 70% would have qualified had they been, we'll say, adults, young adults, to be screened. And a lot of these kids, when they actually screened them, turned out to have abnormal cholesterol levels, elevated LDL or bad cholesterol. 8.3% exactly had a level above 130, which is a level that is not acceptable, and about 1 or 2% had a level above 160. And basically, the question is now, should we be screening young children? And more importantly, should we be putting them on cholesterol-lowering medications?
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think you have to take everything into consideration. If you have a strong family history, it's one thing. And I have a patient in my practice I've had for a number of years. Mm-hmm. His bio dad died at 39 of heart disease. Well, he clearly has a strong family history, a genetic history. And we put him on cholesterol medications basically since he was been 12 years of age because his dad died at 39.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's say your cholesterol is elevated. You don't have heart disease in your family. You're not in a smoking environment. Well, maybe you're elevated cholesterol is because you're not eating right.
Yeah.
And we know that obesity is a big issue in kids.
And
obesity.
When are we going to start to put the right kind of emphasis on diet for kids?
Well, that's a whole society issue. You know, the diet with kids and the emphasis. What affects children? Well, advertising on TV, that affects children. Pre-made foods that the parents may get to bring home and serve, that affects children. The food that is school, that affects children. And basically, kids are not shown the proper way to eat.
Yeah.
And they're just shown the improper way to eat all the time. And that's why we have, among other things, the obesity epidemic and cholesterol epidemic.
Now, as far as statins for kids is concerned, are we sure that that would be...
Well, the issue with a strong family history is one very important issue. If you have a strong family history, it's in a different ballpark. Take those away and look at the kids in the study. About 10% of the kids in the study would, quote, qualify to have statins. Would you want your child to be on a cholesterol-lowering drug at the age of 10 or 12?
Even at lower doses,
Not at all. But if you had a strong family history, it would be one thing. So what I think every parent should do is look at their child, think about whether or not they want to get their child tested. I think that's an issue. But more importantly, feed your kids right and let's change it and let's try to get obesity out of the American population for our young and middle school children.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, listener with us now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen.
How can we help?
Well, I have a question for you. I have occasionally been drinking one of these energy drinks, and I've noticed, you know, a kind of a large, kind of a sugar kick together with, you know, kind of a heavy dose of caffeine. So I've kind of steered away from those, and I've been drinking lately this Mona V energy drink. And I wondered, based on a lot of the claims, it's supposed to be all natural. There's a much less in terms of sugar and no caffeine, and I've noticed I get a more sustained energy. But I was wondering, in terms of the claims from Mona V with like the acai berry and the antioxidants, whether there was any third-party research to back up any of their data.
Yeah, before Zorba answers, let me ask you why you take this. I mean, do you really lack energy without this drink?
Yeah, I've just kind of noticed, you know, during the day, just a little lull. I've been really careful in terms of my diet and had a really, really kind of controlled 6 months of my diet and done really well. And I've just noticed kind of, you know, if I take one out of mid-morning or lunchtime, I get a, you know, kind of a smoother energy throughout the day.
Well, when I get that kind of thing, a kind of a lull, or I just lie down for a while.
Yeah, but you're not working for a living, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very easy.
What do you call this?
That's right.
Is this supposed to be fun? This is my living.
The same thing. In fact, I was just on vacation, and I thought, you know, I get a little dull at about 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, when I was on vacation, I basically arranged it so that I would take a nap from 1 to 2 in the afternoon. I felt absolutely awesome at about 9 o'clock at night. But very hard to do.
Yeah.
There is no third party at all attribution to energy drinks. And when you look at the energy drinks, you've got to look, and they sort of, I divide them into a couple of different classes. One class is the caffeinated energy drink. And how does it work? Caffeine. That's what it is. It's a highly concentrated caffeinated product like Red Bull. Perfect mm-hmm. example. And then the others are the clammy drinks that there are lots of claims involved that this is not caffeine, but it gives you a certain amount of sugar and that gives you enough energy and you metabolize them. And I think basically the way to look at them is to try them and see how they feel to you.
Which he's done.
Absolutely. I think that's a very fair way of doing it. And I'll give you the perfect example. People find, for instance, if they do a certain amount of exercise, they feel good. But if they do more than that exercise, they feel tired at the end of the day. Sometimes exercise energizes you. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes food energizes you. Sometimes it doesn't. So I would try these drinks and see how they feel to you. But I would stay away from the ones with caffeine. Just because, you know, I think if you're going to get caffeine, you should know exactly what you're getting. And now, if you want to have caffeine just, you know, as in coffee, that would be fine. But I think the caffeinated energy drinks tend to be over the top. How long have you been drinking your natural energy drinks?
About 3 weeks.
Uh-huh. How do you feel on them?
Well, I notice that, you know, I don't get that shaky feeling. I don't get the high sugar rush,
uh-huh.
you know,
mm-hmm.
off of the more commercial ones. So it tends to be more of a level day.
But
I don't notice that, you know, kind of I really could lay down and take a nap. I mean, I don't have that feeling.
That's good. Now, did you change your diet at the same time? You mentioned something about diet. Are you dieting?
Yeah, about the last 4 months, I've just kind of restricted my diet to about 2,000 calories a day. Trying to lose a few pounds, and actually over the last 4 months I've lost about 10 pounds, which has been, you know, kind of my goal.
Uh-huh. Congratulations with that. And by the way, so it might be both of those. You know, it might be you're losing weight, which is excellent, which is what we need. And as I said, congratulations. And you've got an energy drink. It's probably not one or the other. And if that gets you going, do it and continue with it.
Great.
So thank you so much for calling.
Well, thank you so much.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, it's that time in the show once again for our medical MythBuster. We have a listener myth today from Lynn in Milton, Wisconsin. Lynn has a question on Teflon. She'd like to know, is it safe to cook with Teflon-coated pots and pans?
I never thought of that.
No. We have talked about that a time.
We talk about that all the time. And actually, since Teflon first came out back in the 60s, it's really been a question because we know that that Teflon actually contains a type of chemical which is called PFOA that has been linked to cancer in laboratory animals when it becomes a gas.
Mm.
And in a pan, it does not become a gas. So part of the recommendations from the EPA and from the feds are, if your Teflon is scratched and has lots of flakes, toss the pan and get another pan. Well, a lot of people, that's sort of the way their Teflon pan is because they don't use the rubber spatula. They use a metal spatula. And so, you know, the flakes are there. Now, there is good evidence the flakes won't hurt you. There's good evidence. On the other hand, people worry about the flakes. So I say, toss the pan if you're worried, get a new one. Or you may do what we did in our house because my wife was concerned about this years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically have cast iron skillets.
Yeah.
You season them with oil. You cook with them. If you want a nonstick surface, what you do is spray something such as Pam or a nonstick spray. And they work wonderfully. And the only thing we use our Teflon pan for is eggs.
Yeah.
And the reason is eggs still stick to the cast iron skillet no matter what we do.
Yeah.
But we reduce the amount of Teflon. And I think that's a reasonable way to doing it.
Yeah.
But I don't think Teflon is bad. And if it were bad, the feds have looked at this over and over and over again. If it were bad, it would not be on the market in this case.
If you've got a myth with a slippery answer, send it to us and we'll try to bust it. Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. And a listener now, Zorba in Hayward, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
I have some questions regarding omega-3 or fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
My physician has recommended a supplement of like 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of omega-3.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go to the store, it's always hard to find that perfect combination of what they have recommended, and they don't recommend a certain brand or type. Everything I have tried isn't quite exactly what they recommend, but you get close enough.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is the aftertaste, even though on the jar it says, of course, there's no fishy aftertaste. So my questions are, do you recommend a supplement? And if yes, What is the, you know, the dosage, or do you have a particular brand? Is there another good source of omega-3 that maybe for food that I know I'm taking or eat salmon quite regularly and walnuts and flaxseed?
Mm-hmm.
And then also I have heard that too much EPA can thin the blood and even get in the way of the DHA. So I'm not really sure what the combination is the best. And I've also heard from one physician if you have an aftertaste, throw it in the freezer. And another physician says that ruins the benefit.
So I'm wondering if
he can help me out with fact and fiction.
Yeah, lots of interesting questions. Let me ask you something.
Yes.
Can you swallow those big pills?
Yes, hardly.
I'm starting to take fish oil, and it really is a challenge. I take the pill out of the bottle, and then I look at it, hold it in my hand, hold it in my fingers, get the water ready, but somehow force myself to put that pill in my mouth and drink that water, and I do get it down. It sure is many fun. That's the biggest pill in the world.
It's clear that Tom has trouble swallowing those enormous capsules. And actually, I have to tell you, I have the same problem.
Yeah.
I looked at those capsules, and I thought, gosh, these are really big capsules. You know, I mean, these are really... are really large.
Answer all those questions.
Let's look at it generally. Yeah. First of all, I want to get rid of medicalizing supplements and move away just to the side. We know that fish once or twice a week happens to be healthy. Now, we're not exactly sure if it's the fish or if people who eat fish once or twice a week really engage in healthier activities. And as soon as we take fish and try to put it into a capsule, we immediately lose something, like the rest of the fish. So we don't really know what we're putting in the capsule. We're putting omega-3 fatty acids, and it's a GHA, and it's this combination and that combination, and this has been proven and that been proven. And the reality is none of it has really been proven that well. So let me tell you the way I would prospect it. Number one, fish once or twice a week, great. The fattier the fish, the better. Salmon is great fish. I think that's great. Now, fish oil has been shown to help reduce triglycerides, which are a risk factor for heart disease. Keep in mind that although they chemically reduce triglycerides in the bloodstream, there is no credible evidence that shows that when they do that, they also reduce heart attacks and stroke. Mm-hmm. We're reducing a number that we have that we know is associated with heart disease, but let me tell you, there are lots of numbers that are associated that don't necessarily mean anything in the final analysis. So pick a fish oil capsule that you can swallow that is recommended by consumerreports.org. That's what I recommend.
Okay.
And I'll tell you
why.
They test it. They test the capsule. Costs $5 for a month. Go onto their website. Go onto their natural foods website. Use the one they recommend. They test a number of them. Or go to a house brand. Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS. And the reason why, they will stand behind their brand. And that's one of the things I would recommend.
But if we aren't sure whether fish oil works or not, how can we trust Consumer Reports or anybody
else to tell us which one
is better?
That's if you decide you want to take the fish oil supplement in addition to fish. In other words, I don't think that fish oil should supplement fish. I think it should complement fish. In other words, have fish once or twice a week because we know that it's worthwhile. Now, the problem with fish oil is that for a lot of people, it does give them a fishy taste, and it doesn't matter what you do to it. Why? Because you are belching fish oil. It is oil, and you're belching it, and it has an odor. And so what I tell some people is take it at night, and a lot of people are not bothered by as much at night. And it may be the type of fish oil you buy, the brand, or the amount of fish oil you take. So some people can tolerate 1,000 milligrams a day, but they can't do 2,000 or 3,000 milligrams a day. And as far as the heavy metal thing, you know what?
Yes.
I have enough to worry about in life that I just don't worry about heavy metals and fish oil.
I just need to fish more.
That's exactly it. Enjoy.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you have a lot of opportunities to fish there in the Hayward area, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Well, Zorba, before we leave for the week, it just wouldn't be a complete hour without hearing from our friends at the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. This time, however, it's your old school teacher, Miss Schutte, who is being taken to task by Deputy Diane. Diane,
Miss Schutte is dead, by the way. I don't think she was old when I was young.
Well, from the heavens or the grave, she can hear. Diane writes, I heard you I heard you say that your teacher, Miss What's-It, said that you all speak wrong. Actually, the word to use should be wrongly, because when one modifies or describes a verb, one uses an adverb, wrongly, and not an adjective, wrong. I never corrected anyone because I never want to make anyone feel bad, not badly, but because I know that you are self-confident enough to learn something new, I think you would do a great service for your listeners to mention this distinction between adjectives and adverbs, especially for your younger
listeners.
You know
what? I think these grammar police should get their own show.
This is a good thing.
Yeah, what is she talking about, self-confidence? I don't have self-confidence.
Well, that's true.
I'm sick of this. I just can't take this anymore.
Well, you can always blame Miss Schutte.
But she's dead.
Even Miss Schutte doesn't have impunity from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. To join them, send your citation, Zorba will love it, in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, the Jules and Vincent Vega of radio production, are the two hitmen in charge of this hour. Adam Friedrich is our executive producer, our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and those other guys, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0724Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.